We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. Your hosts are Michael McNamara and me, Ryan Schwan. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the New Orleans Pelicans injury report, because that's all we ever talk about, Michael. That's it.
Yeah, that's why the podcast is 2 hours long every week. It's that's how long it takes to go over all the injuries.
Oh God, another injury. So now not only are we without Ajinsa and Ashik and Pondexter, but our backup point guard Norris Cole is out about the same estimated time as Pondexter and Ajinsa. So we probably won't see any of those three guys until end of November-ish, like Thanksgiving Day. Maybe all of them will come back on Thanksgiving Day, and there'll be a great celebration. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah, I'm still slightly optimistic. At least one or two come back before then. But don't forget to add Eric Gordon and his back to the early season injury report.
Yeah, I can't forget about Eric Gordon, but they haven't given us any timeline, which I guess with this team, that's even worse.
Yeah,
that probably means he's out until like February at the latest.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen his last game as a Pelican under contract. Now, yeah, it's always, I mean, we have timetables on the other guys, but should we trust them based on the past? I don't know. I'm not holding my breath either way, but, I guess my question to you is just your gut feeling, because there's no way we can know or they're going to disclose it. How much of this stuff is preseason precautionary? And also, what is your feeling on this staff when it comes to how much they're going to push guys during the season? I mean, over an 82-game season, everybody's a little banged up. And, you hear the phrase, there's a difference between being hurt and being injured. And, you know guys play through certain things and not other things. We've seen Monty be very, very conservative over his tenure. What do you think, if you had to sum up their overall philosophy during the regular season, is going to be when guys start getting nicked up?
I fully expect that they'll be sitting people regularly. And you said this before, like the only guy who matters on this team is Anthony Davis. So if, Tyreke Evans gets nicked up and, he's got a little bit of a sprained ankle, I fully expect that they're going to, unless like we're in a playoff chase at the very end, they're probably just going to have him sit. They talk like, Alvin Gentry talked about what they did in Golden State when the metrics that they were keeping track of showed that Klay Thompson was not being as explosive on the floor. He wasn't moving from point to point as fast as he had for most of the rest of the season. They just basically limited his minutes for a couple games, sat him out one game, let him get recuperated, and then they threw him back into the fire. And, you know, I fully expect that he probably learned that and is going to try to do that as much as possible with the Pelicans as well. Do you get a different impression of them?
This is what I'm curious to see is what they want to do and what they say they're going to do versus what they do. I mean, I already said a couple of weeks ago on this podcast, I do not buy that we're going to see 10 to 15 minutes of Jrue Holiday, that I think that's what they're going to want to do, and situations are going to force their hand. Otherwise, he's going to be playing well. He's going to be saying he feels well. His trainer's going to be saying he feels well. I don't know. I get the feeling that that they're going to want to do certain things. I think that the extreme cases, the game that still bothers me, remember it was a back-to-back on the West Coast trip. I want to say it was the Clipper. It was some game that, might have been Golden State. Some game that we knew the Pelicans were going to lose, and Tyreke Evans had gotten hurt the night before, and then they played him in that next game on the back-to-back, and he wound up missing a couple afterwards. If I remember right, I think he got hurt in the Clippers game, and then they had Golden State the next night. Stuff like that, I don't think we'll see. I think if Holiday is showing signs, they'll pull it back a little bit. But, I don't know. I think they're being much more precautionary. You know, we even saw in that first game, Tyreke Evans, Gentry said he would have played if it was a regular season game. I have a feeling same thing with Eric Gordon against Atlanta, if that would have been a regular season game. So I guess I'm just curious to see how, banged up these guys are. Would we still be looking at, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks for Omer if this was a regular season, 2, 3, 4 weeks, or did they just have him on that timetable and a little slower to come back because they know there's no regular season games here? So I guess I'm curious to see how injured these guys really are versus are they just putting out conservative timetables, because they've learned in the past that when they put 2 weeks and the guy doesn't come back for 4, fans seem to get really upset, along with bloggers that we know.
Yeah, I don't know anybody like that. they have already, though, broken their rules about Jrue Holiday. Because the last game, he played 11 minutes, not 10.
Ugh. Yep, they're pushing the envelope.
It's a slippery slope, man.
It is. I mean, Gentry came out today and said that they don't think that in the meantime they're going to be looking for a third point guard, that Tyreke and Jrue should be enough till Cole gets back. I mean, if we're putting Jrue at 15, then that means Tyreke is playing at least 33, which means he plays no more at the other positions. Even if you take them at their word, how are you filling the second guard and the swing, the small forward minutes? I mean, that's 96 minutes, and basically you've got Eric Gordon and then a bunch of other fringe players. I mean, you really think they'll be able to keep Jrue to 15 minutes, and might that mean that we're going to see 40 to 42 for Tyreke? How do they fill those 96 minutes?
Yeah, I'm assuming Alonzo G is going to – is it G or is it Gee? I have no idea how to say his name. He's been on our team for how many months now? I have no idea how to say his name.
I'm going with G for the year.
Okay.
And he, all right, good. Unless he tells me otherwise.
Okay, because I've been going with G, but – I have no idea. Could be a hard G.
You know, anyway, whatever we choose, it's going to be the opposite. So
right,
let's just
right.
go with G and do it. I mean, we already go with Ashik, and I know that drives people crazy. So let's just go all in on this one.
Let's just like purposely start referring to every person with the wrong name.
Yeah, Anthony.
But I did give the actual answer of how Gentry is going to solve the issue with all the injuries. Like, Anthony Davis is going to play every position.
Oh, I don't see why not. I mean, do you remember that at the end of last season, you asked me if we had Anthony Davis cloned and Stephen Curry cloned five times, who would win that series? I mean, I think you were onto something there. I think we saw Anthony Davis in a pick and roll against Chicago as the ball handler, step back three. I mean, it's not crazy anymore. He could be a guard. He's a 7-foot guard.
Yeah, and on one hand, I'm not certain his handle is strong enough to do that on a regular basis, but it could be. Like, if somebody came to you and said, this offseason, you know, we heard all about the threes, but what we didn't hear about was he decided he wanted to be a ball handler, and he worked all summer on ball handling skills. Would you, like, what ceiling would you put on him as a ball handler? Would you say that, oh, he's just going to be like a guy who you can just have a release valve and be okay, like a third guy? Or would you be perfectly comfortable with this guy turning out to be like your lead ball handler?
You know, I always thought that he would be closer to the former. You know, I think for as much as you can make fun of Blake Griffin, and rightfully so, I think he's one of the best ball handling big men I've seen in a long time. I don't think Anthony Davis is that far from that level, and I think he eventually gets there. This year,
yeah.
I mean, we saw in the Bulls game, which we'll talk about, we saw him bring it up the court a couple of times, and it didn't look, you know, that it was goofy or forced or, you know, anything of that matter. I think it's something that he could do pretty regularly.
Yeah. Yep, so I definitely think, you know, we'll get 24 minutes of him at power forward, 12 minutes of him at center, and then 6 minutes of him at point guard, and 6 minutes of him giving, you know, Eric Gordon a little bit of a breather at shooting guard. And then, you know, if we go into overtime, he'll play small forward just for fun.
Sure, why not? I'm down. but I mean, seriously, I have said in the past, you know, wake me when Anthony Davis gets hurt and everybody else is just, you know, a supporting piece floating around Davis. But, you know, their replacements, for the most part, are worse. And when you get to certain parts of the roster, significantly worse. I mean, at what point does, even if Anthony Davis is MVP caliber, he's James Harden and then some from last year, you know, are we at a tipping point now where, okay, we could survive without Pondexter, and then, yeah, we could survive without our bigs, we'll play more small ball. Now Norris Cole is, have we reached the tipping point of where we go from this team being, I don't know, a team that could beat most teams on any given night to a team that's going to struggle with most teams on any given night, or are we still an injury or two away from that tipping point, in your opinion?
I think we're at the tipping point right now. I really believe you have to have, like, 7 actual NBA-capable players that aren't going to murder you for you to be able to pull off that kind of situation. Like, you know, people talk about Harden and how it was so amazing that he carried that team when Dwight Howard, you know, was injured for half the season. And it is pretty amazing, but he had a lot of NBA talent around him. There's a lot of really good guys on that team who supported him. Like, right now we're to the point where Anthony Davis, his supporting cast is Drew Holiday's right leg, Tyreke Evans, and Dante Cunningham and Ryan Anderson. Is there anybody else that you would be like 100% if with all these injuries, like, do you think any of those other guys that we have available are 100% NBA talent?
I wouldn't say necessarily over an 82-game season. Guys shining with, you know, with knowing that this might be their only chance for a couple of games while there's really no scouting reports on that. Like, if you wanted to really get positive, that would be my pitch. A guy like Sean Kilpatrick, couldn't he do it for, you know, couldn't he be a reliable NBA player for 82 games? I would say no. I would bet heavily on no. Could he, for 6 games, when nobody has a scouting report, when he's hungry, when he's fresh, when he's playing with confidence because he knows nobody's behind him or he's not getting the hook? I could talk myself that into that being a possibility. Has Alonzo Gee had impressive six-game stretches over his career? Yes. I mean, so if this were a team over 82 games, but I think that, you know, that's kind of what the good teams do, is they have guys like that who come in for small stretches and, you know, could fit a role, but they wouldn't be guys that you would want over the course of a season. So that would be it. I don't think it's very hard to think that Norris Cole is going to be the difference between a win or two in six or seven games or a Jensa the same, but yeah, I mean, when you start putting them together, I could see it. So let's imagine that Asik is back and he's playing. You like what I did there? He's playing from game one. If you could have whatever, some kind of magical elixir from whatever nerd board game you play, Settlers of Catan or whatever, and you could...
That's an excellent game.
Do they have magic elixirs in that game, or is that...
They don't.
Oh, okay. But let's say that you have a magic elixir, and you could bring to full health one of the three other guys, Coupon, Jensa, or Norris Cole. Which one would it be? What do you think has been the biggest individual injury out of those three?
Coupon.
And why is that? Is it because of the people who are going to take his minutes? Is it him exactly, specifically? Okay.
Like, who's taking Coupon's minutes? Like, that's...
Babbitt, it looks like.
Babbitt, or maybe Jiggy. I mean, there's nobody else.
There's one guy I definitely don't want taking his minutes after watching that preseason
game.
Yeah,
we'll get to that just a little bit. Yeah, there's one guy definitely, like, if he's on this team when the season starts, then I will have lost all faith in Alvin Gentry.
Yeah, unless it's just for unintentional comedy, but yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's just, Pondexter, he's not a difference maker unless you put it into the context of, what are they going to replace him with? And then you're like, wow, he's a difference maker. So, I mean, if Gordon's fully healthy and Tyreke Evans is fully healthy and you can get more minutes out of Drew, it's not so impactful because those guys can shift around and cover all the guard minutes, and then you just have a little bit at the small forward you have to fill in. But we know that's not the case. We know Drew's not going to be playing long minutes at all. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm a little worried about what's happening. Like, is that the guy that you would pick, or does the center position worry you after watching Kendrick Perkins? I guess the word is play. He was playing, right?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I think that we could get by there with small ball. For me, it's Norris Cole only because of Drew Holiday. I mean, with Drew Holiday beyond minutes restriction, that's basically another half of injury that you have there. And just the more guys that could handle the ball, that could push the ball at this pace, you know, I think that's important. I think even at his best, Quincy Pondexter in this offense is a finisher. He's a catch-and-shoot guy. I think you could replace that. I think the more ball handlers that you have, the better, and the more guys who could push it without turning it over. So for me, he's kind of been the biggest of the three, and it's the one we have the least information on. It's high ankle sprain, which, you know, notoriously could last and get re-aggravated. I mean, he could be out to December, or, you know, it could be a conservative evaluation and it's not that bad and he's back by the end of the preseason. We really don't know, but yeah, that would be the one that I would fix if I had my Settlers of Catan elixir card.
There's no cards like that, man.
I don't know. I haven't played the Settlers. But, yeah, so, I mean, that's enough for the injuries. I mean, they're frustrating, but, you know, we'll see where they are as the regular season grows near. I mean, I'm hoping Eric Gordon's was just precautionary, kind of like Tyreke's was. But, yeah, they – I'm not that worried right now. It's just the margin of error is getting much, much, much smaller, where now if another injury happened, I agree with you. I think they're right on the tipping point, but definitely can't afford another injury, so knock on wood with that.
This is just a completely out-of-the-blue thing I'm going to bring up, and it just happens because I was bring up a box score so we could talk about the actual games that we watched. How has Austin Rivers managed to get somebody to write an article about him turning around his NBA career? Like, I like Jonathan Abrams. A lot of his stuff's pretty good. But he's the same player he was when he was crappy for the Pelicans.
Hence my theory. You know what is one of the most frustrating things that people say is they'll say, oh my God, John has totally changed. He's done a 360. Drives me nuts, right? Because obviously
that's probably
maybe
what happened, yeah.
That's what Abrams is meaning by turning around. He literally turned fully around, and he's now exactly where he started as being the same garbage. He's just in a different uniform. That's the only way I could explain it, because he did have the one good postseason game, I guess. If anybody thinks that guy's turned it around, I don't know what they think, what the expectations were in the first place. So my guess is he got amazing access, with the caveat being to write a fluff piece, and that's what he did. And sometimes that's what you have to do for as a writer, so bully to him.
Yeah. Well, and here's the funny part about that, too, is, like, I've seen multiple people point to that one game he had pretty good in the playoffs. There were 14 games in the playoffs. What did he do the other 13? Like, his team played 14 playoff games, and he had one good game. I'm sorry, Austin. Like, I know when I pull up the box score on any Clippers game, I'm going to see a 2-for-7 line for you, and it's to be expected.
And I will guarantee that him and Lance Stephenson fight at least once this year, maybe even on the court. So that's going to be interesting. But yeah, I don't know how that. I'm hoping for Abrams' sake that he wrote the article and the editor picked the title.
right.
Because I don't know how anybody in good conscience could pick that title, but. So yeah, we were blessed this week by able to see moving pictures of a Pelicans game. Unless you count section 117 Road J's footage from the Atlanta game, that led to about a minute in highlights. That's all we saw from that Atlanta game in Jacksonville. But yeah, we got to watch this one, and I will say I even watched it twice. Thank you to NBA TV for the replay. So what did you see? What did you like, not like? What quality of basketball were we watching? What should we take away, if anything?
All right. So you gave me four things to say. So I'm going to start with what I liked. Anthony Davis is a basketball god. I'm speechless. I don't even know what, like, last year he was so good. And I enjoyed watching him so much. What he was doing in the first, half of that Chicago game was pretty much just putting on the display of every single talent a basketball forward could want. And he never did the same one twice. Like, most guys have, like, two or three moves or two or three things they really like to do. Like, he was basically, oh, this time I'll post up with my back to the basket and then cut across the middle and take a shot. Or this time I'm going to jab step, step back, drill a shot in your face. Oh, here, I'm just going to pull up a three because I can. I'm Anthony Davis. Like, I'm going to dribble the entire length of the court and dare any of you to even, like, look at me funny. Like, the guy is just – there's nothing he can't do. He had that pass where he, like, was cutting, got the ball late, was cutting under the basket and bounced it out to Dante Cunningham. How did that pass get through? It was just Anthony Davis was it was there was no question if you watched that game who by far was the best basketball player out there. There was no question.
Oh yeah, and I mean, to me, we always feel a need, it seems like, as sports fans, to compare players, and he's the next this, the next that, and I said coming out I thought the Kevin Garnett comparisons were low and the Marcus Camby ones were really low. I said some kind of hybrid of David Robinson and Hakeem, and while I think that might be what his stat lines look like, it's really not anything what his skill set is like. I mean, David Robinson was a guard in high school, so he had some ball handling skills. You know, he had some fluidity. And I love David Robinson. I mean, one of my favorite players ever. I still think Anthony Davis already could do things that David Robinson couldn't do, and you could just imagine where he's going. I mean, when we're going to talk about skill set and we see him evolving, what is his skill set going to be look like at 25? Like, if you had to pick a player of the last 15, 20 years that his skill set will look like, or even like pick little pieces from that guy and pieces from that guy, what do you imagine his skill set to look like as he enters his prime in 2 or 3 years?
I honestly see a mix between Garnett and Durant. Like, that's where I am. Like, his offensive skill set is a wing. That's what I see, a fully capable wing that is able to step out, is able to drive, is able to operate in the post against smaller players, which in his case is almost everybody. The guy, just the only thing he has yet to prove to me, and I'm like 98% of the way there, is that he can be a real playmaker with guys around him. Because right now he's just, he gets the ball and there's nothing anyone could do to really stop him. So why shouldn't he take the shot? Like, why pass it?
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm wondering, where do you think, what about off the ball? I think something that is underrated is how well people could be used as a decoy and how defenses guard guys when they're off the ball. I mean, we've seen the Ryan Anderson or Peja Stojakovic defense of, you know, even if they're on the other side of the court, their men don't come to help. They pretty much stay in their hip pocket. How far is Davis from that? I mean, do you think that he's going to have a body next to him at all times, even if, let's say, he's on the weak side for a corner three? Or do you think that teams are still going to let him have that and help off him at times? How do you think teams are going to guard him off the ball?
I think actually at the beginning of this year, they'll probably let him prove that he can hit those shots. I think it's a mistake, though, because there are guys who can receive the ball on the wing with, you know, and if you give them any room, like, even if he's not hitting the shot, like taking a long jumper, you give Anthony Davis a head of steam moving in any direction, he's going to get a good shot off. Like, I don't have any worries about him doing that. So I have a feeling that there's that whole gravity thing that they've started measuring about how, you know, Kyle Korver draws so much attention that he has like a really high gravity score because there's always a player right on his hip. I have a feeling that Davis will quickly turn into that, but I don't know if he can ever be guarded in the waist like Kyle Korver can, because he's a big man. How do you keep, like, your big men are not as mobile as wings. Like, you put your best, quickest wing when you're chasing Kyle Korver so that guy can get around screens and stay on his hip. What big man can keep up with Anthony Davis? Name one big man in this league who you think could guard Anthony Davis all over the floor and stay up with him.
I mean, the guy that I would say, you know, I would have the most interest in, but I don't think he could do it, but Serge Ibaka, I think, you know, would have a little bit of success. But
I think the only other guy I can think of is Noel, but he's not, he doesn't have the savvy yet. But I think he has the physical tools. That's the only other big man I can think of who might be able to keep up with Davis.
Yeah. All right, well, a couple more Davis things, because we always forget about him in the pod and focus on everything else. So far this preseason, 23 minutes a game. He's averaging about 21 points, taking 16 shots. So he's taking a shot, what is that, about every minute and 15, minute and 20 seconds he's on the court. Question one, if I said 30 points per game, what would be the odds that you think Anthony Davis could go over that in the regular season? What kind of odds would I have to give you for you to think it's a good value to place the bet?
So 30 is a big, big number in the modern NBA. There aren't a lot of players who hit that number.
Right.
And it used to be more.
How many shots per game, field goal attempts per game, do you think he would have to average to get score 30 points per game?
22.
Yeah, I thought all things go well, 21. But, yeah, right around there. So 21, 22. I mean, right now he's getting 16 and 23 minutes.
Yeah.
So, you know, 36 minutes and you're putting in him at a little over 24 shots. I mean, are we seeing an aberration in the preseason? Is this a result of some of the other guys? I mean, but then again, we're talking about Omer Asik and Quincy Pondex. They're not exactly high volume guys. I mean, is there a chance that this is a sign of things to come and we are looking at a 24, 25 shot per game guy? Because I remind you, the Pelicans are getting over 91 field goal attempts a game, and that's up 8 over what they got last season. So even if you say, okay, of those 8, 2 or 3 are going to go to Davis, I mean, is it possible we're looking at a 23, 24 field goal attempt a game type of guy?
I fully expect that he will be breaking 20 shots a game this season. I don't know how high it'll go, but he's breaking 20. And I think my only argument against it is maybe because he hasn't shared the floor a lot with Tyreke Evans or with Ryan Anderson. And if you look at just usage rates on this team last year and even this preseason, other than Anthony Davis, the two most prolific shot takers are Evans and Anderson. So it just so happens that he's spent less time on the floor with the two other guys who might take shots from him more frequently. Jrue Holiday is going to pass the ball to Davis all the time. And, you know, I fully expect that Kupon would be as well when he's out there. So that's the only thing is if Tyreke Evans is playing like 36, 38 minutes a game, Davis is going to have more times where Evans is taking shots from him.
Here's my other question. There's, you know, during training camp and preseason, all of these ideas float around and all of these things to get excited about. And one the players keep repeating is that the coach tells them, doesn't matter who it is, first guy to get an open shot takes it. Now, if I hear that as an opposing coach, I make sure that Dante Cunningham happens to be the first one open or Tyreke Evans from behind the arc. Let's say other teams start to do this, and now that Dante Cunningham 16-footer is open on literally every play, and the mantra is, first guy to get an open shot takes it. But Anthony Davis covered is more proficient than Dante Cunningham wide open. Do you think that they stick with that philosophy? Or, is that just a general rule and something that Gentry finds a way around to get his guy 20 to 25 shots, regardless of how the defense is playing them?
I think that that's just a nice thing to say. I really do. Like, I would fully expect that should Tyreke Evans start a game next to Anthony Davis and he just dribbles up to the three-point line and jacks up that shot over and over again because no one's guarding him there, it would stop. I fully expect that the real context of that statement is, get the ball up quickly. If you have an open shot, take it right away. Otherwise, go into the offense and then generate the first open look and take it. You can't, like, it's not just if you happen to be standing there open, it doesn't matter where you are, shoot. And it's just one of those nice things you say so that everybody knows that you're the coach who is trusting everybody on the floor. And so I don't know. I don't really buy the quote that much. Do you?
I mean,
we did see Sean Kilpatrick just jacking in this game.
Right, and it's hard as a coach to say that and then go back on it or then make caveats or then, you know, basically, well, if you're open, but not if you're this. I mean, that's a statement and a philosophy that you either go all in on or you abort. So I find that interesting. I think, you know, in the preseason, teams are just running and they're basically going to work on whatever they work on. Even in the first half of this game, we heard Gentry come out after the game and say, you know, that the first half wasn't on the players, that they were literally trying something on defense they've only been working on for 2 or 3 days, and these are all kind of chemistry experiments or whatever. I think when the regular season games come, teams are, their priority 1, 2, and 3 is going to be stopping Davis, and I have a feeling that we're going to see a lot of Dante Cunningham mid-range shots as a result, and then Gentry's just going to have to, he's going to have to figure out, you know, or either walk back on that philosophy or, you know, figure out a way for...
Play Dante less.
Yeah, yeah, but then it's just going to be whatever other guy. So I just think that's something interesting to watch for is, you know, on Golden State, Steph Curry was the number one guy, but there were a lot of guys who were also, you know, not as good offensively, but could make teams pay, and also Steph had the ball in his hand, so it was harder to get him out of the offensive game plan. So I think that'll just be interesting to see, because for me, I'd rather Anthony Davis taking shots contested than some of the other guys wide open. So we'll see.
All right. Did you have anything else good from the game you wanted to bring up?
Well, I don't know if this is necessarily good, but it's just something I find interesting. Do you know who is by far the plus minus leader on the Pelicans in the preseason?
No, I don't, but if I had to guess, because you're saying that, I know it can't be Anthony Davis, because that's the obvious answer.
Right.
So, Evans? Is it Evans?
No, I mean, he is in the plus, but by far, the plus minus leader, and he's played plenty of minutes, is Dante Cunningham.
and he's probably averaging, what, like 4 or 5 points a game?
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing. So it's a good and the bad, because Dante Cunningham, I watched the game. So the first time I watched it, I watched it with no sound. I was doing other things. And then the second time, I watched it regular. But the first time, I'm just like, oh, my God, Dante Cunningham, he's killing us out here. Here's another missed jumper. And it's, you know, it was just like, it was just something where he was completely frustrating me. And I was rethinking, you know, how important Quincy Pondexter was. But then you go to the plus minus, and he's the plus minus leader. And it's just the trend for the preseason. And I mean, you look at him, he's shooting 26% in the preseason, 14% from three, which he's starting to take more of. I mean, he's already attempted 7 in the 3 games. You know, he's solid on the boards. He's doing little things here and there, but you watch him and he's somebody that, at least with my personal eye test, I have no desire to see on the court, yet somehow the team does so well when he's on it. Do you think this is a complete fluke, or this is the definition of just a guy doing things you don't see in the box score?
I think it's a mixture of the two. I really fully don't expect that he would be anywhere near a leader, because he's just so limited offensively. But yeah, I'd have to see like who he's playing with, because if he spent a lot of time with, you know, Anthony Davis out there, and he happened to be sitting down during the stretches where they went on runs against Davis, like, it just could be luck. But of course, the reason why they went on runs could be because he sat down.
Yeah, you know? I mean, their defense is amazing when he's on. I mean, you even look at that Atlanta game where they started off so well defensively, and then they were a dumpster fire in the second half. So I don't know. It's something to where I seem to only notice him far more often when he's doing something negative, but something's got to be going right there. And I just wonder if the trend continues, but that was really all I walked away. I mean, the way I felt is that in that first half, I saw a lot of Chicago Bulls players. I mean, the defense wasn't good by any measure, but I also saw Bulls players hitting shots that I don't expect them to make you know.
You don't think
often.
Bobby Portis is going to hit all his threes?
Yeah, I mean, there was...
He was impressive.
There was some... Yeah, no, I mean, he's a quality player. But, yeah, there were some shots I didn't expect to fall, and then they didn't in the second half. But you seem to be somewhat bothered by what you saw defensively in that game, or worried. What were some of the things you saw that you didn't like?
So the first caveat I should say is Gentry did say they were trying to do something different. So maybe they weren't doing it properly. Second caveat I should say is Douglas Roberts was one of the people on the floor, and he might be the most horrendous defender I've ever seen in the history of basketball.
As if his offensive game was that impressive.
No, it wasn't. But his defense was abysmal to the point of I don't even know what he's trying to do in certain situations. But what I was watching out there was a team that was freely switching any sort of side pick and rolls. So if the other team was attacking at an angle or from the side, they would just switch. Whoever was, you know, whatever big man would switch on to the little guy, and whatever little guy would switch on to the big man. And it created mismatches that killed the Pelicans in that, like, just over and over again. Paul Gasol would torch the guy. Nicole Mirotic was killing guys. It was really bad in almost every situation that they had those switches. And on one hand, a lot of that was they were running switches so that they could have somebody beat the crap out of Chris Douglas Roberts, who was, you know, basically doing his best impression of wet tissue paper. But Eric Gordon is probably just tissue paper. He's not wet, but he's tissue paper in that situation. Like, that's what I kept imagining. Was I was like, okay, Douglas Roberts, what he did there was wrong, wrong, wrong. And he jumped the wrong direction. He was playing Olay defense, but Eric Gordon, he wouldn't play Olay defense. He'd stay in front of the guy. But if anybody starts backing Eric Gordon down or gets a step on him and is powering through him, Gordon's not going to really put any more resistance after. Once he's beat by a bigger guy, he just stays beat. And that's just the reality of Eric Gordon the last couple of years that we've seen. So the whole time I was like, I'm wondering, okay, Gentry and Ehrman, you know, they're maybe used to guys like in Boston. Avery Bradley is going to be a gamer, and Marcus Smart is going to be a gamer, and they're going to fight hard against bigger guys and make their lives miserable. And then, of course, Golden State, you got the exact same thing. Like, all the guys there are going to be switching, and Curry's the weakest, but he's not a pushover. The guy tries, and he works hard at it. I don't know if this team's wings are that at all. And, like, I can't even be certain that Tyreke Evans would stand up that hard to a bigger guy coming at him. So that's what, like, made my stomach churn a little bit. Was I was like, if we see this particular defense, it's not going to be pretty.
Yeah, I agree. But again, if they're going to try it and learn the hard way, much rather than learn it in the preseason, and then again, you'll go against some teams where the bigs aren't going to punish you like that, you know.
That's true.
And
Gasol and Mirotic are probably the two most skilled big men in the league as far as pairs go. Like, I guess you could say Gasol and Randolph, of course, but like Gasol and Mirotic are both capable inside and outside and passing. They're really good offensive big men, and they can make you look pretty stupid.
Right, but when Golden State is out there with Bogut, or especially without, you know, are you really going to be that fearful if, you know, Bogut, not Bogut, but let's say Draymond Green is taking Tyreke Evans in the post?
Right.
So it's something that, you know, I doubt will be the foundation of their defense, but you work on it now when you get the right matchups, when another team is going small ball against your small ball, you know, that might be the most effective strategy, stuff like that. So, you know, I'm happy they're working on that stuff now, but yeah, it did not look pretty.
Yep. So I've already murdered Chris Douglas Roberts, but I do need to say one thing though. The worst defensive play in this game was not Chris Douglas Roberts. It was our good buddy in the middle, Kendrick Perkins had a play where, and it was Etwan Moore. So we're not talking like Aaron Brooks speed demon. We're talking about a guy who's he's quick. But he's an NBA guard. I wouldn't say he's above average in speed or quickness. Etwan Moore goes into a basic pick and roll with Bobby Portis, and Kendrick Perkins is supposed to be guarding Portis in this particular situation, and he fades back, and I mean way back into the paint. So Etwan Moore goes off the pick, gets some speed going, and Portis kind of steps off to the side of the court. He's not flaring all the way to the three-point. He's just flaring to a mid-range. And Kendrick Perkins takes two steps towards the side of the court. He doesn't move towards Bobby Portis. He just moves him kind of like – he's kind of like moving towards that direction that Bobby Portis is sort of in now. But he's still backing up. So he's actually still getting further than Bobby Portis, but now he's two steps out of the paint so that Etwan Moore can just run right to the basket and do a layup. And there is literally nobody within 6 feet of Perkins at that point. He basically decided to guard nobody. I think he was guarding the baseline, or maybe the ref. Maybe he was worried the ref was going to get hurt. I was completely flat. I could not figure out what went through his brain. Portis is walking to the left, so I must walk to the left as I back up too. There's nothing that made sense in that entire exchange. I was floored.
So you're saying you don't want to see Kendrick Perkins play much in the regular season?
God, it's so bad. And I really want to like the guy. Like, just something about him that's just so, like, goofy. And, you know, you kind of want to be, like, the guy who likes the poor put-upon guy who's had every single bad article written about him for years. But he really is kind of bad at basketball.
Yeah, I mean, he's bad in this era of basketball. I agree. You know, this is not the right era for him. Maybe if he came along 20 years ago, he'd be more serviceable player, but I don't know really what he could be in this age. I mean, I feel like we skipped over any there were still other positives here. I think I've been kind of surprised by Tyreke Evans this preseason, as far as I really thought that with Jrue Holiday limited, he would be much more of a facilitator. He's kind of gone the other way. I mean, his efficiency, he's scoring at a great clip. I mean, he's a 60-50-100 guy right now. You know, he's hitting from the field. He's hitting his threes. He's putting up 17.5 points in just 24 minutes. But, you know, there aren't many assists, and this is a trend for the entire team. I guess here's something that I find really interesting, and I want to get your idea of what's going on here and whether it's something we could expect. This is it's a combination that's kind of weird. You and I talked about how, you know, with the increase in pace and the responsibility put on some of these guys, that we would expect the turnovers to go up. Not only is the pace, you know, through the roof and top five right now in the NBA in the preseason, but their turnover percentage is elite as well. I mean, how is it possible? What's going on here with a team playing at such a high pace, getting so many possessions, and yet their turnovers and turnover rates are so low?
I would probably say that if we had access to tracking data for the preseason, I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Pelicans had the fewest number of passes of any team in the league right now.
I would agree, and you know, this is really weird, but the team that this is reminding me of, and, you know, I think we thought, well, Gentry coming over, this is going to look like the Suns, this is going to look like the Golden State Warriors. It's a slightly faster paced 2012-2013 New York Knicks. And that was a really weird team. But that was a team that was first in 3-point attempts and 3-point makes, which this team is doing. But they were also first in turnover percentage on offense. And I don't know if you remember, but that's basically what they were. They didn't pass much. They hoisted up a lot of threes. And if you look at the Warriors, like last year, you're looking at a team that well over 65% of their it was right around 67-68% of their field goals made were assisted on. This Pelicans team so far this preseason is barely over 50%, and you know who exactly, you know, who had that exact same number was that 2012-13 Knicks team. I just, you know, I wonder if this is just a result of preseason trying things and certain guys being hurt, or if that's, you know, if we could expect this team to look a little bit more like that team than maybe the Warriors.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible. I mean, the number one thing that I keep wondering is where did all the pick and rolls go? I mean, this team is setting screens, and there are a lot of, you know, screen and rolls that you'll see, but mostly they're like Ryan Anderson and whatever guard he's with. Ryan sets the pick. He pops, and the guard tries to see if there's anything out of it, and if not, he passes it to Ryan, and then they reset if there wasn't an open shot. Or it's somebody goes into the post, and one pass is delivered to them. They're just – and on some respects, Gentry's been saying over and over again, we're not worrying about the offense right now. We're worrying about the defense. I'm willing to bet that's a bit of a smokescreen, but why would they really show their offense – really in the preseason? Like, I'm not sure you would do much more than run your vanilla stuff necessarily and just try to work on your defense in this for this particular team. So I don't know if it's going to hold true when the actual season starts that we're going to see so few of the, you know, the primary assist engine in the NBA is the pick and roll. Guards will get into that pick and roll. They either find the man dribbling or they kick it out to a guy on the edge. And Tyreke Evans, like, people forget, like, his number one assists really were on the pick and roll. He drives and he dumps it off to a guy down low. He was not particularly skilled at finding a perimeter shooter. And if he's not going into pick and rolls with Anthony Davis on this particular lineup, does anybody else roll hard to the basket on a pick and roll on this team?
I mean, maybe Ajinsa. There were some nice assists to him last year when he did that. I do find that rather interesting. I mean, you tend to think...
Are you worried by it at all?
I guess I'm worried in all the jump shots, you know, especially if guys aren't hit. I mean, the Pelicans are hoisting up 28 threes, but they're only shooting 34.5%. So it's one of those things where we had, you know, one of the best three-point percentages the last couple of years, but we didn't take enough. Now it seems to be the inverse is happening, and either way, you're getting the same amount of points out of the three-point shot. You're just having more possessions to do it. But what I'm really encouraged by, and the other thing I'm wondering is a fluke, is this team's getting 35 free throw attempts a game. Again, mm-hmm. Preseason, small sample size, and it's coming from all over the place. Obviously, Anthony Davis is getting there a lot. I mean, at this pace, given regular minutes, he's probably averaging about 9 a game, which, you know, most of the elite scores, that's around the area that they're in. So, but I mean, it's coming from everywhere, and a lot of it's coming in transition because they are able to push the ball. I still wish they had some better finishers in transition. You know, watching Chris Douglas Roberts race down court and then get blocked off of himself, you know, wasn't all that encouraging. But yeah, a lot of guys are getting to the line. But yeah, I mean, they're getting shots, they're getting open shots, and they haven't even started hitting yet. I mean, Ryan Anderson is shooting 24% this preseason. We saw him get going. My favorite play of the game was as the Pelicans were coming back in that third quarter, Ryan Anderson put up a three, and he started walking away you know, like a second after it was out of his hands. He knew it was going in.
Yeah.
And that sparked a little run. But Yeah, without, I mean, Eric Gordon, before he missed his game, wasn't hitting yet. And so I guess I'm really encouraged by the amount of shots they're getting, the quality of shots that they're getting. But just something to watch out for. I don't know if we're going to see the ball movement that we expected and that usually comes with high-paced teams.
Yeah. Let me ask you one question, because we did see Sean Kilpatrick put up, you know, a pretty nice, well, not this, that's being ungracious, a very nice line in this game. He was impactful without any question. With the injury news that we've got, there's obviously now room for a guard on this team that we need. Like we were so focused on Ajinsen and Ashik being out that we were talking about Jeff Adrian or maybe this, you know, Jerome Jordan, or they even signed a big guy to join their team today.
Oh, please say his name.
I'm not even going to try.
Oh, that's going to be my favorite part of the podcast. All right.
All right. So, but like, I don't know. Is there now actually more room for a guard on this team? Like a guy who could play shooting guard and the point guard?
Yeah,
like, I mean, does Kilpatrick have a chance?
When we talked about the five, my two favorites were Kilpatrick and Adrian, and now with the way Adrian's been playing, I might even have more confidence in Kilpatrick making the team. The Times Picayune is reporting tonight, as we talk about this, that the Pelicans are in discussions with Bo McCaleb, an ex local star who's played overseas and puts up a lot of points, so he might be another solution as well. I think there's another role, even though Gentry says that it's not necessarily a need. I think it's something that on this team, I think you could have bigs go down and play small ball and kind of play positionless basketball. What you can't do is have guys, you know, is have a collection of guys who can't push the basketball and who can't, you know, handle the basketball. I think the more of those that you have, the better. So I still think roster spot 14 or 15, one of them is going to be a guard. And Kilpatrick, I didn't like the way he played. I liked the results in the fourth quarter. I didn't
right.
necessarily like the process and the way he played. So I think on most nights he plays the same way. He'll shoot you out of a game more than he'll shoot you into it.
Yeah, he was doing his best Brian Roberts impression, I felt like. Except he was more willing to pull up from three.
Yeah, no, I mean, he was playing like it was still summer league, basically. I mean, that's how all the guards play in summer league, so he must have thought he was still there. Yeah, so I think it's possible, and I think, like I said, if you could catch lightning in a bottle, I mean, wasn't there after a game or two we thought Nate Walters could be the answer at backup guard?
I don't know if we said he was the answer.
Well, I mean, for the rest of that season, like,
yeah, absolutely.
That's what I'm saying, is maybe you catch lightning in a bottle for the 4, 6, 7 games that you need somebody, and then, like I said before, with all these guys' contracts, they're not guaranteed till January 5th, so 15th, so, or, yeah, January 10, somewhere around there. So you use them until you don't need them anymore, and then, you know, as cold as it sounds, you do away with them. So if Kilpatrick is...
you do away with them.
I mean, I'm not going to feel bad. They're getting paid quality money, so whatever. But, yeah, I mean, that could be something for Kilpatrick, but I'm not that impressed. I'm not impressed with Corey Webster. I thought Alonzo Gee... A couple of minute times there, I thought he was a real pest defensively, and I like that. I do think there's a role for him on this team, especially while Pondexter is injured and Drew's minutes are limited. Do you think he's in the rotation starting opening night?
I do. And partly I think that's because, I don't know, I want to root for Luke Babbitt. I just don't think he's going to be able to stick. Like, he made Doug McDermott looked like an all-star.
Yeah, I mean, when Babbitt's missing, like, open three-point looks, you really start to question why he's on the floor. I mean, those have to be the shots he puts down at an insane rate just defy all the other things that he's not necessarily fantastic at on the floor. So
just one really quick question about just the Bulls in general. After watching that game, what Bulls player were you most impressed with? And it can't be Cameron Bairstow, because I know you thought his fouling of our three-pointers was probably the best thing a Bulls player ever did. So other than Cameron, who was amazing, who were you most impressed with on this Bulls team?
I really think if he was given a bigger role or the chance, and maybe he'll get it with Hoiberg because he likes this kind of guy, I just think Mirotić has just such outstanding potential and versatility, and he's so different than you expect. I mean, you expect him to be soft. He's definitely not soft. You expect him to be a shooter, but he could do other things. He's just a guy that, you know, I scoffed last year at him being better than Ryan Anderson already. I would make that swap in a second, you know, without even thinking about it, both short term and for the future. I'm so impressed with Mirotić.
Yeah, and he was even missing his shots last night, but I came away with the feeling like he was just being really impactful, because he was in there mixing it up, going after rebounds, ripping things away from guys, playing off the dribble and making just like the smart move and the little extra pass to maybe not the guy who's taking the shot, but the guy who's going to have the right angle.
Yeah,
he's a smart basketball player.
I mean, it drives me nuts when a guy gets somebody up on the pump fake and then goes around him or, you know, finds a way to score. He got Cunningham up on the pump fake, went right into him, and got free throws. Like, just like you said, guys who can impact the game in multiple ways, even when their shot is off, because even the best player, their shots are going to be off on any given night. And, yeah, he's the guy that I'm thoroughly impressed with. And I think, you know, I know Hoiberg loves using the stretch four and even plays his stretch four, stretch fives a lot. I think that he could have a fantastic year now that Thibodeau's out of the way.
I'm fully expecting Gasol to have a pretty amazing year again, too.
Yeah,
he just seems like the right guy for that role, you know?
If he stays healthy, yeah. I mean, it's really interesting. If you had to bet, I don't know which one, do you think that both Noah and Gables, both of them?
Actually, you went out a little bit on that question.
Do you think that come March, both Gibson and Noah are on the Bulls?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, I don't see others.
At this point,
they
can get something for Gibson, and I think they just have to find a person who wants him and move him. I really think that's kind of like Noah still has some potential in a Hoiberg system, because though he can't shoot very well, he can pass and move the ball and still defend at a higher level than Gibson can. But Gibson, like, there's a lot of people who would love to have that kind of backup power forward playing on their team.
How about you? I mean, obviously they wouldn't want Ryan Anderson, but would you be interested in a deal in which Anderson went to a third team, Gibson to New Orleans, and then Chicago gets some kind of wing player? Would you swap out Ryan Anderson from Taj Gibson on our team?
No. But I'd think about it long and hard, because Gibson provides different things that this team kind of needs. I'd have to see how well our shooters are actually doing on this team. Because if we can't get a couple guys on the floor who can shoot at any time, you kind of need Ryan Anderson around to do that.
Yeah, no, I know. But Drew Gordon and a nice, good shooting small forward with Gibson and Davis would be a pretty mm-hmm. enjoyable lineup for me, especially if that small forward could defend.
Yep.
Yeah. Side note, actually, I did door-to-door sales in Tampa, and I did at one point come across a long law firm in which the last two guys' names, the partners' names, I don't know how they found each other, but were Long and Hard. It was the law offices of Long and Hard. And you can't even flip it. I don't know which one's worse, but I just, I think if one of those is my last name, I'm pretty much staying away from everybody in law school with the opposite names as becoming a partner. So anyway, just something. If anybody's out there in Tampa and you have, I don't even know what kind of law they did, but look them up. It'll be worth your time.
Probably nightclub.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was good to get to see the game. I don't know if we're going to be able to. The next game's in Lexington against Sacramento, I'm sure.
And last time we weren't able to watch it, though we could hear it at least.
Yeah. So, I mean, this will be over soon enough. We'll be able to get games. But at this point, again, I'm just hoping for no more injuries in this preseason. And I want Gentry to keep doing what he did against the Bulls and experimenting with stuff, even if it's not right against that team on that night. You know, if you're working on something in practice, try it out against live competition. And I mean, the other thing I'll say about these last two preseason games that I really believe over the 82 game season is I think that this team could win any game and lose any game, regardless of where. I think, unlike the past, we're going to see a couple of victories this year where the Pelicans come back from 15 to 20 points. And then I think, conversely, like I said before, and that the style that they play, they're going to blow some big leads because of the number of possessions. So, you know, I think that this is a team that the game will be in question regardless, just because of the style they play, and they'll be able to come back against anybody and pretty quick. I mean, they mounted that comeback in the third quarter, just a matter of minutes. So,
yeah, I kept looking. I was like, wow, we're down 17, and a couple moments later, it was six. I was like, this is nuts.
Yeah, it's gonna happen. So,
all right. So did you have anything else you wanted to talk about or some questions you wanted to embarrass me with?
Well, I just got one. I mean, we got to end it. So
okay.
I figured, you know, I was thinking about acronyms, and I'm sure that, you know, even you out in your suburban world have heard of YOLO.
Yeah.
Right? You only live once. So,
yep.
So, but acronyms are actually a pretty big thing in rap. So I wanted to give you the acronym. What we'll do is you could pick a letter. I'll give you that letter. You could go ahead and try to guess. We could do this for as many letters as you want before you give up. But yeah, I want your guesses with the acronym. So, you know, YOLO is one, you know. Here's another fairly popular one, pretty recent. HAM. Okay, just like the food that I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yeah.
So this is Kanye West with Jay-Z, and he said, "I'm about to go ham." So three letters. You could pick any one, and then you could let me know what you think it stands for. So go ahead.
So he says he's about to go ham.
I'm about to go ham. I'm going to let these people know who I am. I'm about to go ham. So go ahead and pick a letter.
H. Let's say
hard.
Hot.
Hard.
Hard. Hard. Hard. And military.
No.
Starting it. Hard ass. Male.
No. The A is a little tricky because it's one of those where, like, there's a hidden word in there because it's not big enough to be part of the acronym. So
oh.
HAM stands for hard as a mother effer. So you're about to go at something hard as a mother effer, so you have to go ham on these people. So I want you to go into work tomorrow and just go ham on the weakest of your employees. Just let them have it.
Right. Yes, that's exactly my plan. I'll tell them I'm going ham on them.
Maybe the most famous one of all time, Wu-Tang Clan and Notorious B.I.G. referenced it later on. But it's a philosophy. And it's a philosophy that you could even say that a lot of Republicans have. So the acronym is, I mean, anytime that you could cross Wu-Tang Clan and Republican philosophies, yeah.
Okay.
I want to see the RZA in the next Republican debate. But yes, and that's a rapper's name. So theirs was Cream.
Cream.
Yeah, if you notice, there's a lot of food references in the rap game.
Are any of the letters weird? Is it
C R E A M, Cream. What letter do you want? I'll give you two. So I'll give you two, but they can't be next to each other.
Give me the C and the E.
I feel like Vanna. Okay, so the C is cash, and the E is everything.
Right, so
cash, blank, everything, blank, blank.
I have no idea. Cash, blank, everything. What even word could you put in there? Cash is,
There's no little words that are not represented here. Every word is represented in Cream.
It's an R word?
It is. Cash, blank, everything, blank, blank.
Oh, God.
Just imagine the people at home yelling at you.
I can't even think of anything like an R word that would like be. I'm trying to come up with something like cool.
Remember, this is something Republicans might believe too, and they're not the coolest cats on the block, as you would say.
Is it responsible for spending? I can't imagine a rapper saying, "I want to be a responsible spender."
Oh. So cash rules everything around me.
Okay.
Cash rules everything around me.
All right.
Get the dollar bills, y'all. All right, this is the last one, and I will even challenge those at home to think about this one. Adidas, just like the shoe. Again, I'll give you any two letters as long as they're not together.
It's spelled exactly like
the
shoe.
It's spelled exactly like the shoe.
Use it in a sentence, please.
I need
to be the spelling bee person.
Okay. My friends asked me what I did today. My friends asked me what I was doing. Why I didn't come and play, why I didn't answer the phone, and I told them Adidas. Well, I don't know if that's as good of a one.
I just keep thinking about shoes, like, okay.
How about, that's another one. Why are you so obsessed with girls? I would answer Adidas. So you could pick any two letters. Why are you so obsessed with girls, Ryan? Adidas.
Well, okay, I think I got one of the letters. If I get one of the letters, do I get like bonus points?
Well, I mean, I would just strategize. I would just strategize and not use that as one of my two letters.
Okay, because I bet S is sex. Because that makes sense. So let's go with. Give me double D.
Ooh. Day, dream. Blank,
daydream.
Blank, day, blank, dream, blank, blank. And you think you know what the S is. I like to imagine that you have like a college rule notebook out right now. And
I'm just guessing at letters.
So the first D is day, and the second D is dream.
Dream. Now I'm completely like off in like a completely different place. I guess dream about sex makes sense.
Okay.
So it's gotta be something like.
Well, okay. So what did you just say? What are the? So you got
daydream about sex. So there's gotta be an A at the beginning and an A between day and dream.
Oh, there's an I AD.
Oh, it's I. That's right. I can't even spell Adidas.
Oh, good.
Something to dream about sex.
Okay. You know.
I have no idea. What would the I be? I can't even think of a word that the I would make sense. Igloo?
What if the no. I was just itself?
All day I dream about sex.
There he goes.
Hey, I got one. Of course, you had to tell me three letters.
Yeah, and there's also Ruskiss also changes the S to spitting, which is a reference to rapping. So you could also use it as all day I dream about spitting.
That's disgusting.
Well, not literally spitting. They're like spitting the hot rhymes or flows. And then, so those are the one acronyms. There are two people that I'm guessing you heard of that their names are kind of acronyms. One, you know who LL Cool J is, right?
Yeah.
Do you know what his name stands for? What would you guess the LL stands for?
LL is Locked and Loaded?
Locked and Loaded Cool J. No, it's Ladies Love Cool James.
Oh.
And DMX. Any idea what you think...
DMX
stands for?
If I knew what BMX stands for, I'd make a guess like that. no, I have no idea.
Well, it's either the Dogman X or Darkman X, whatever. And I will.
How would I ever get that?
I don't know. I will not ask you what you think NWA stands for because the podcast will be shut down forever. So let's just end it here.
I actually do know that one though.
All right. Well, let's keep that one to ourselves.
Okay.
So this was the latest thing. You did pretty good. I'm proud of Adidas. Are you gonna use? You gonna use Adidas? Maybe text.
At work, that would be kind of hard to use it.
Maybe text
work.
The wife Adidas just randomly on like a
yeah,
Wednesday.
That's a great plan.
Yeah. Otherwise, just go ham on
Coming
a couple
home,
employees
Adidas.
Tomorrow.
Adidas.
Yeah.
All right. So thanks for everybody for listening to me embarrass myself on In the Know. We'll be back probably early next week.